extra.
Good evening, good evening, good evening. This is Harriet Westmore with the More Wine and Music Podcast, a podcast where I discuss early genre of music over a glass of wine. I want to welcome everybody tonight. I apologize. Usually I do the live of the More Wine and Music Podcast on Fridays, but I wasn't prepared. So I wanted to make sure I was fully prepared with the content that I'm going to bring tonight. So I wanted to make sure I just have an extra day for me to finish up what I wanted to talk about tonight. If you haven't already, please hit that subscribe button, hit the like, and please share the content with others so we can get more audience. Those who are interested in learning about the early genres of American music, just share it with somebody who would be interested. And also, if you would like, you can send a donation or help keep the podcast going with more material by sign up with buymeacoffee.com/morewinemusic. And you can, you know, give whatever you feel that you would like to give. And with that, I will give you a personal shout out on the show as my token of appreciation for you to help support me in the podcast. All right. So tonight, I want to talk about, we're continuing on with season two of the jazz genre. So tonight I'm going to be talking about an early jazz pioneer, which is King Oliver. King Oliver, he was a band leader. He's one of the early pioneers of band leader of the jazz genre. So I wanted to talk about him. He was a mentor, actually, to the great Satchmo Louis Armstrong. So he made a great influence in the jazz community. So born Joseph Nathan Oliver on December 19th of 1891, I'm sorry, 1881 or 1885, whichever, depending on what source you read. Of course, you know, they always get the dates of these artists, you know, not accurate. He was born in Louisiana, and I couldn't find any information about his parents or his early childhood. But only thing that I found that he was at an early age, he started playing his first instrument was the trombone, and he was actually studied music. So it wasn't something that he just picked up by ear. He actually had studied music, and that was his first instrument was the trombone. By the time he turned 15, became a teenager, he wanted to switch instruments of playing the trombone to the cornet. So he began to play the cornet at the age of 15. And also that's when he decided to start touring with other bands in Louisiana in the South area. And by the time he, while performing with these bands, he was able to hone in his craft of using the mute when he played the horn. And with using the mute, he was able to create sounds that was, you know, later became his trademark. I want to welcome my old friend and coworker, Kathy. How are you? I'm glad you joined in. With, like I said, while, you know, using the mute on his horn playing, you know, it created all these unusual sounds. And so the crowd just went wild on that. By 1917, King Oliver rose popularity, and he was actually billed as a headliner by a band leader called Kid Ory. And it was at this time that he was dubbed King. So now from here on out, Joseph Oliver is now King Oliver. In 1918, King Oliver decided to leave the South, leave his home in Louisiana, and move up to Chicago, where he, you know, felt that he can get more music and more notoriety, as most Southern music artists do. They usually leave the South and move up North, and it's usually either Chicago or New York. And King Oliver was no exception. He left Louisiana and went to Chicago. And he was billed with the other band member called another player called Bill Johnson's band. And he played at the Dreamland Ballroom in Chicago. He left Chicago briefly and went to California. He didn't stay there in California long. I guess he couldn't find, you know, the type of notoriety that he was searching for. So he returned back to Chicago. And he, at that point, that's when he became a band leader himself. Instead of being a part of a band, he was good enough to where he wanted to start his own band and be a band leader. And he started his own band group, which was called the Creole Jazz Band. And it was there that he played at the Lincoln Gardens in Chicago. As popular as the Creole Jazz Band was, and they became really, really popular. So popular to where King Oliver wired a message back to his home in Louisiana to ask his young protege, the great Louis Armstrong, to come up to Chicago and join him and be a part of the band. And that's where Louis Armstrong, he did. He left. I guess Louis Armstrong is from Louisiana also, or at least around the area. So he left the South and came up there to Chicago and to be a part of King Oliver's band. With him, alongside Louis Armstrong, was clarinetist Johnny Dowds, trombonist Onro Daughtry, pianist Lil Hardin, and drummer Baby Dodds. This lineup was considered the dream team. I mean, this band was, you know, they were just honed in on their craft. They were one of the hottest bands out. Hi, Mom. They were one of the highest bands out there, and they were very, very good, and they were always, you know, having gigs in the Chicago area. They recorded several songs, although a lot of the songs didn't survive at this point, but the ones that they did, it was a few recordings of this band, and it says that, I mean, the recordings, when you listen to it, it doesn't do the band justice because they were just so outstanding in their performance, especially a particular song called Dipper Mouth Blues, which was King Oliver's solo, and he played the cornet. I mean, he was so good that on that piece, in that particular song. So, and this was, you know, later on described by Louis Armstrong about that particular song, that, you know, that was one of the best solo as a cornet that he ever heard, or anybody ever heard, because a lot of people after that tried to emulate the sound that King Oliver had performed. The band, unfortunately, was only together for only 4 years. So they formed this group in 1920, and by 1924, for some reason, I don't know, I couldn't find out the reason why they decided to break up, but they did. And after they broke up, Louis Armstrong went ahead and, you know, that didn't stop him, obviously, because we all know who he is now. But he decided to move on and went to New York. And so, you know, that's, you know, Louis Armstrong just continued on to flourish in his career. And he went to New York. And in 1927, King Oliver decided to take his chance and go to New York as well. He was given the position to play at the Savoy Ballroom. It was said that he was originally offered to play at the Cotton Club as a performer or band leader, and he turned that position down for whatever reason. And that kind of came back to haunt him. So even though he didn't take that position, it was later offered and accepted by Duke Ellington. On top of that, the fact that being in New York, as anybody know, New York is a tough place, you know, to thrive, you know. And King Oliver, he started to realize that his music was becoming to be outdated, and this was like in the late 20s into the 30s. So his style of music wasn't as popular as it was in his heyday. So, you know, he started to, his performances started to get less and less. He was being called less to perform because, again, like I said, I mean, music changes, you know, different styles of music, it changes all the time. So you pretty much have to keep up with the time. And, you know, playing certain styles in certain ways, although it was good at the time when it was, when you start playing it, but as years move on, you've got new sounds, new, you know, artists coming in and, you know, they might be a little better than what you were. And so King Oliver fell into that, category to where he just wasn't progressing enough. So, and on top of that, this is where he developed pyorrhea, which is a gum disease. And it was said because he ate, which was, I thought was kind of weird. I never heard of it, was he used to love and eat sugar sandwiches. I don't know what that consists of. I don't know if it was two pieces of bread with, you know, sugar in the middle and whatever it was. You know, that was his downfall of his gum disease because he ate so much of that. And so as a result of that, after a while, it became really painful for him to play because of his gums being, you know, deteriorating and hurting because of this disease. So by 1935, he eventually had to stop playing altogether. It was just too much for him. So, but I mean, even though he stopped playing, he still was a conductor. So he still would lead in the bands that they were, you know, people would ask him to be a band leader and conduct some of the bands. And, he, you know, he still could do that. And a lot of the solo performances that were once his solo performances, he had to a younger, you know, player in the band, in the ensemble, had to take over and do his what was once his part. So, you know, that was kind of a pretty much the beginning of the end of him. After a while, he stayed in New York for a little bit, but, you know, with him debilitating with his mouth and not able to perform, he became disillusioned and sick and frustrated. So he decided to leave New York and move back down south. And he went to Savannah. He decided to, instead of going back to his home in Louisiana, he decided to settle in Savannah, Georgia. And you know, this is the sad part, as a lot of these artists were at the time of their end of their career. I mean, he was so, you know, it was almost like he was destitute. He had to sell his horn and some of his fine suits that he used to wear when he was performing, you know, up in the up north in Chicago and in New York. He had to sell that to survive and to, you know, make ends meet. And it got in, and on top of that humiliation, he had opened up and maintained a small fruit stand. And he worked as a pool hall janitor. So, I mean, as much of a great pioneer as he was, I mean, and to be relegated to this, I can't imagine the humiliation he felt, you know, being at one time, you know, loved and admired and you know, showed his talent, and now, you know, to lose all of that and have to do, you know, a menial job is something that's totally not even what he was, you know, born to do, as to be a janitor and, you know, open up some little side road fruit stand. On April 10th, 1938, Joseph King Oliver died of a heart attack. That's what, you know, the official result was of his demise. But although later on in an interview, his protege and long-term, you know, friend Louis Armstrong believed that he more likely died of a broken heart, which, you know, I kind of believe that's, you know, he was just so disillusioned and devastated, you know, instead of, you know, he probably did, but it was more of a broken heart instead of a heart attack. So, and that's the story of Joseph King Oliver. Again, like I said, I tried to find a little more information about, I don't know if he was married or not. I didn't say, I don't know anything about his family. I don't know if he was the only child or had more siblings or, you know, anything of his parents. It didn't say. So, unfortunately, you know, this is what kind of a short biography. But again, he made a way as an early jazz artist. He was an innovator on his playing, and like I said, using the mute when he played his horn, I mean, was something to really hear. And up until that point, nobody ever did that. Now, afterwards, you know, you've got Louis Armstrong and Miles Davis. They kind of emulated what King Oliver had created. So he made his mark as an early pioneer of the jazz genre. So that's it. I appreciate the audience. And again, if you wish to donate to help keep the program going, you can donate whatever to go to buymeacoffee.com /morewinemusic. And, you know, it would be appreciated because it will help keep the program going and help me deliver better content. You know, I enjoy bringing new, because I'm a history buff anyway, so I enjoy bringing content to the audience of people that's not as well known as the, you know, and who is much as talented as anybody else, and, you know, who I feel that should be, you know, recognized. So again, go to buymeacoffee.com. And / to find my actual account is More Wine and Music. If you'd like to donate a little bit of money, and I will certainly give you a shout out on the shows. So that's it. I appreciate you listening. Next week, I'm going to talk about, and this person is actually, you know, pretty much people know, Fats Waller. I know people have heard that name. So I wanted to talk about him. So I'll be talking about him in episode 5 of next week of the More Wine and Music podcast. I appreciate you guys listening and stay tuned, stay safe, and be blessed. Have a good night. Bye. Soundstripe.